presents an address by His Grace Swami Krishnapad, given at the occasion of the opening of the new institute facility, Capitol Hill, Washington, D.C., on September 27, 1992, entitled, On the Journey to God.
I want to welcome all of you. I first want to make a prayer to my spiritual master. His picture is here, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In ancient system, even cultural, would say spiritual, there's always an aspect of recognizing where the authority comes from. Just as in modern day society, people just speculate. Everything is relative, transitorial, and it's kind of yata mata tata pata, or sort of like anything goes. Whatever feels good, it's okay. But in spiritual paradigms, things are based upon very clear, very authorized structures, or things are based upon connections that are beyond just the relative situations of the material world or the material arena. So we always offer some respect to our predecessors and ask for their mercy. So I'll say one small prayer in Sanskrit as a way to ask for blessings to be able to say something to you that will be in the spirit of what my spiritual master wants you to hear. And he will, his duty is to act in such a way that it pleases his spiritual master. And so the chain goes back ultimately, you know, back to the Godhead. It says, I'm just coming, or getting ready to go again back to Africa, and there we have many, many different projects. But one of my services is that I serve as a high chief, and that is something similar to like a governor, but in the traditional rulership sense. So the chieftainship system or the king system is also based on authority, particular lines, and then people plug into that line. So that is something even done secularly, and even more so it's important spiritually. Om Magana Timiranyasya Gyana Jana Shalakshaya Shakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Namo Vistam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupatkada Mahayam Radanti Swapadanti Kham Namahom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Sri Madhya Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Nityani Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Patharine Deva Sesha Sunjavari Paskatade Zatharine Jai Sri Krishna Te Tanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Zadvaita Garadha Sivasadi Gau Bhakta Vindam. So, you've heard a few things about the Institute, but basically it is just an attempt in trying to give you less reason not to serve God. You know, we try many things in our day-to-day life in trying to maintain our material situations. And we use all kind of creativity and ways how to cater to our sense gratification. But sometimes we don't use our intelligence sufficiently about how to serve the Lord. So that is even more important, because ultimately that kind of intelligence will bring a sense of longevity, a real sense of peace and fulfillment, and of course, exhilaration. So I wanted to just mention something brief, and mainly let you have some refreshment and to know where we are so that you come as much as you can. So this is propaganda to let you know that we are here for you. You know, some people, they speak they speak politically, they speak poetically, and they say they do not speak to try to convince you. But we speak that we want to convince you of something. We want you to know what we're trying to convince you of, so you can accept it or not. You feel uncomfortable with it, then that's okay. Then don't accept it. We want you to know what you're dealing with. This is an arena. It's an eclectic situation. We're just trying to help you to understand more about ancient teachings. As we go back and back and back beyond the modern situations, we naturally touch upon more universals. And these teachings are from what's called the Veda. Veda means knowledge. And so knowledge is not just a matter of information gathering or processing. Real knowledge deals with wisdom. And it deals with ways how to allow the individual to be able to shine more in the society, so that that person is more holistic and more wholesome about his or her relationship to humankind and, of course, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What I want to talk about is something very significant that crosses all traditions, and something that is very important in being able to advance constantly in one's spiritual life. And that is a simple word called enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is so important because we are always seekers of pleasure. And there are two kinds of pleasures. There is the temporary, and there is those things that penetrate just the senses. Our senses are so confining. Mame vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manasyastani indriyani prakritistani karsati. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that our senses, we are suffering in this material world, in these material bodies, due to the fact of miscalculation, misplacement of energies, due to involving ourselves in the confinements of lust rather than love. So these spiritual processes should help to give us real sense of liberation, real sense of freedom, and the ultimate sense of spiritual creativity, which means spontaneity and service to the Godhead. Material activities bring some satisfaction for a while, and then later some stagnation and some disappointment. So when we are enthusiastic in our spiritual life, there is more of a guaranteed sense of progress. The soul itself, the Atma, is pleasure seeking. We can never be in situations where there is not some ruchi, some taste. If we are in a situation like that, we will search out taste. But that taste, again, is in two polarities. It can come from doing things that are somewhat showbottle, flamboyant, extemporaneous, but do not really penetrate the deeper levels of consciousness. And that is what goes on in most of the societies today. We are engaged in different combinations and permutations of material activities, somehow looking for the taste, but having difficulty in finding that taste. So we just alter somewhat some of the variables without going outside of the material arena. And because of that, we find ourselves again frustrated after some alterations. Because ultimately, the soul wants to be nourished. And the soul is hungry, it is starving. And until the soul is fed, until we understand more about Desha Kalapatra, that is time, place, and circumstance in relationship to how we are transmigrating from body to body, universe to universe, from galaxy to galaxy, different genders, different races, different situations, looking for somehow some pleasures. Then, as there is sufficient sukriti or pious credit, and devotional, direct or unconscious activities, one acquires enough benefits, or one acquires enough credits to be able to look beyond just the mundane, look beyond just tribalism, beyond just racism, beyond sectarianism, beyond just even sectarian religious considerations. Because ultimately, it is not a matter of what language you pray in. It's not a matter of what dress you wear. It is not a matter what part of the world you're in. It is a matter of how much you are in your heart actually trying to give up sense gratification and to serve the Lord, glorifying the Lord unmotivatedly, unconditionally, with uninterrupted involvement. So religious activities ultimately to bring us to that point where we are mad, enthusiastically mad, intoxicated in trying to serve the Lord a little better. If we are not learning how to become mad for the Lord, we will continue a madness for egocentric, sovereign, self-centered, materialistic activities. And you see that on the rise of how people becoming more and more animalistic. Even worse than the animal, because the animal has some sense of quota. The animal has some sense of etiquette. But we have moved even beyond that in certain activities. So we give you this point about enthusiasm. We're going to talk a little bit about it and share some things from our founder, Srila Prabhupada's relationship to that. Why? Because these are particular times when spiritualists are having a chance to be certified, a chance to determine how much they actually really genuinely want to be committed to the Lord, or how much there is more involvement in trying to satisfy the lower self rather than to access the higher self. So this is a time where there's so many material problems that causes people to obfuscate their view about spirituality. These are times when there are so many problems within the religious groupings that it causes people to become overloaded and to minimize their own individual progress. These are times when Maya or Satan or sin tries to cause so much fragmentation that everyone is running after the parts and missing the chance to accelerate. And one of the ways that this comes about very dominantly is to take away your enthusiasm for spiritual life, so that you start either backsliding, going back, trying to find pleasures from things that you thought you had given up, or that you start looking for some fast, quick solutions that turn into some immediate or fast disappointment. So one of our great teachers, Rupa Goswami, he explained some particular techniques and some particular axioms that are important to for one to take inventory of to be able to make pursuit of love of God. And one of the first things mentioned is that one who is on a spiritual path should be very careful in trying to maintain enthusiasm. One way to do that is to try to be less and less affected by the modes of nature. They're current. Sometimes you are in a very happy state. Sometimes you find that things are more complicated. Sometimes there is some static. Learn to thank the Lord for whatever comes before you. If you thank the Lord for whatever comes before you, then you will make any situation positive. You will make the negative situation positive because it'll be a learning experience and you'll grow from that. You'll realize that there are no accidents. And so if something has come before you, there is some particular reason that is part of your life space, a particular reason for you to grow from them. When there are very positive things happening, that you do not claim ownership or proprietorship of that, but you also thank the Supreme for that. In this way, you maintain a balance of being situatedly enthusiastic because you are realizing that it's all a part of God's mercy. The more that you accept that things are the mercy of Krishna, the mercy of God, then the more it will be that for you. It is explained in some of the great transcendental scriptures that one who is dear to the Lord is unaffected by happiness or distress, unaffected by friends or enemies. One does not make those kind of classifications. If you call someone, identify someone as your enemy, then it means now you are pushed to respond in a certain way of negativity. But if you don't claim that, then you don't push yourself to act in that accord, to coincide with such mindset. So there are ways of how to keep that enthusiasm. First way is by accepting, thanking the Lord. Make it a practice, not just a theory. Make it a practice, a day-to-day practice, and see the differences. Devotional experience and lifestyle should never be something that is just theoretical. If you are following a teaching, a system, and it is too conceptual and theoretical, you will lose your enthusiasm and you will turn to some practical, applied sense gratification. It should be practical and it should work according to your ability to follow the Shastra or the spiritual scriptures, according to your ability to follow the activities and advice and guidance of previous saintly personalities, and your ability to be connected with ambassadorship or guruship, your ability to put those things together for check and balance, and then to go on with a sense of confidence, a sense of security. Otherwise, there should be tremendous paranoia, healthy paranoia. You should not be blind followers, but there should be some focusing. If you cannot engage in a focused sense of devotion, your devotional creeper will not grow. If you're in an environment and there's so much ambiguity, there's so much pajapa or so much gossip, there is so much faithlessness, then you will also imbibe that and you will have that as part of your character. Enthusiasm, firm faith, patience, all of these things will help us to accelerate. Firm faith means that you are very, very skeptical and you process and evaluate. And as you see that you feel comfortable with what is available, then you agree to attentively to follow. No student can learn properly if every moment they're challenging the teacher. You challenge the teacher, you challenge the system until you feel that you're ready to somehow use it to see how it's going to work. When you are confident or feel some sense of security that you're ready to make that leap, then you make that leap with submissiveness, with attentiveness. It takes intelligence and it takes courage and it takes potency for one to commit. Especially in our Western cosmology, there's a tendency not to commit to anything. Just sociologically, anthropologically, philosophically evaluate, process, reassess, but do not join, do not commit, do not oblige yourself, because then it's considered you've lost your so-called rational intelligence. So it leaves everything, again, on the platform of relativity, minimizing the fact that there's a summum bonum or absolute Godhead, absolute truth, absolute culture, the divine culture of love. So when we want something higher, then we have to be ready to pay particular price. So firm faith or firm conviction involves processing, evaluating, and then coming to a particular point. I'm going to just read one or two letters. This is a volume of a book. When my spiritual master was on the planet, he wrote so many books, so many letters, so many books, volumes and volumes of books, but also so many letters directly to disciples, to government leaders, letters involving certain ways the philosophy was to be applied. And so I'm just going to read maybe two or three short letters about points on enthusiasm, just to share that and share some of his blessings with you, but also to give you some things to reflect on so that as you leave here, you will not leave feeling that you just came to another church, or you will not leave here in the spirit that you just came to be entertained, or you will not leave this environment without some challenge. We don't ever want you to come around us and not to go home challenged. Because if that does not take place, then I've wasted your time, and I've wasted my spiritual master's time, and I'm held accountable, because life is very short, and if we engage in trying to share some transcendental message, there is some tax to see that that message is executed in a particular way. And if not, then the devas or the demigods hold the individual accountable. All things basically in the material arena are mainly controlled by what's like angelic or even above angelic host. It is not that the Supreme Godhead directly involves himself in all the day-to-day activities any more than the president or a governor does. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead has the energies, the Bahiranga, the Tassa, the Antaranga, that is the more material or the external separated energies, the marginal and the directly spiritual, or the internal. And these energies are interplaying in different ways throughout the various multi-cosmos. So, when I, as we read this, we'll see some interesting points in relationship to service, enthusiasm, and how to accelerate ourselves. Here we're having this opening, and so we are enthusiastic. Even though many of us have not slept, some of the devotees are up the last 2 days cooking or making arrangements, because we're doing these things very fast so that we can move on to many other types of services and programs. And I was telling them a few days ago, every few days when we have a program, the beauty is not necessarily just the program, but the amount of bhakti or devotion that goes into trying to serve and to make things available for others. That is the ecstasy, because ultimately we're all servants of the Supreme Lord and we're servants of each other. We are our brothers or sisters' keeper. And as we follow and involve ourselves in such things, then what happens is that each person's devotional creeper or plant grows. It is nourished by the service. And as we increase the quality of the service, then the creeper or the plant grows and grows. And we have more higher realizations. We have greater perceptions. We have more contacts with the divine. And those things should gradually happen in our lives. Otherwise, we will think that religion is just something sentimental. Or we will think that it is something that is just historical, but cannot take place at this day and time. The great personalities descend so that we can make it applied, and we can hop on the bandwagon and be able to transcend with them. So this is a letter of 1966, where Srila Prabhupada is writing to one of his disciples. He says, I can see how you are advancing in Krishna consciousness by the feelings expressed therein. And I am so glad you are feeling such transcendental pleasure in serving the Lord. This transcendental pleasure is unlimited and increases as we increase our desire to give more and more voluntary service. So one's own individual realizations and higher pleasures in relationship to spiritual connections increase as the commitment of service and as the purity of service attitude grows. When you are in a situation that is unfair, you can do so much, you can commit so seriously, so genuinely, and get cheated. Or you can work so hard and get partial pay. But when you're in an environment where it is righteous and just, then according to how you commit, you receive, but even you receive more than what your quality is. And this is the position of the Lord. The law is there, but as we genuinely commit, then we receive even more than what we are worthy of. And if we're not receiving sufficiently, if there is deterioration, if there is stagnation, then it means there is some impotency. Anytime you're in a spiritual environment and there is deterioration, there is stagnation, it means there is some lack of spiritual potency. Spiritual potency always involves growth exchanges. Whether they are external or internal, there is always growth, adventure, excitement, and enthusiastic interchanges. To surrender to Krishna all at once is not generally possible. But as we serve Krishna, some of you who may be here for the first time, there are many names of God, Allah, Yahweh, Jehovah. We use the name Krishna. It emphasizes very confidential understandings and evaluations of the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. And this whole system of bhakti yoga deals with the individual trying to once again understand the activities of the spiritual realm, begin to associate with the transcendental system, and to be able to, in a very expedient way, to have personal, extensive, sublime relationships with God. In the transcendental loving services of the Lord, it doesn't matter whether we are working, cooking, painting, writing, chanting, or whatever. They are all the same. There are no such distinctions of higher and lower on transcendental platform. The important thing is that we are engaging our time and energy in the services of the Lord. The neophytes, they fight so much about the detail. Your religion is better than my religion. Your prophet is better than my prophet. Your guru is better than my guru. It's important to pray in the temple, the mandir, or only the mosque, or only this, that place. Those things are all there, a part of the external paraphernalia. If the external paraphernalia doesn't bring about some internal growth, then it actually becomes a distraction. One should not engage mechanically in any processes, and one should not be so dull that they cannot have the compassion to know how to make bridges to be able to bring more and more love of God consciousness in existence. Please continue to help in these efforts. Your enthusiasm is very encouraging to me. There's a great need for spreading this kind of knowledge. We may not expect, then this is another letter from 68. I am very much pleased with your preaching enthusiasm. When you say, if people won't come to us here, we will go to them. And this is the process of preaching as this is required. If you just sit back in your church, in your mosque, in your temples, in your cathedrals, in your preaching centers, and think that people are going to come to you, especially in these day and times, then something is wrong. You have to go out into the communities. You have to go out where the people are and to connect in some way that they feel some inspiration to come for association. If you are sitting just simply waiting for people to come, while everywhere there has been so much bombardment that's incarcerating their consciousness, where constantly they're being subjected to cheating types of activity, and to think that they're just going to come to you and to deny or to just to put aside that most things are cheating, that is, of course, a very immature way of trying to pursue being spiritual warriors, being spiritually concerned individuals. We have, you have, we all have to find ways how to do the life-saving work. The lifeguard doesn't sit in the chair and somebody's calling, he says, oh, just come close to me and I'll take care of you. His duty is to jump in vigorously and to create a situation to somehow to catch the person. Sometimes he has to hold them tight, hold them rough. Sometimes he has to talk sweet to them. Sometimes he has to just practically almost choke them to bring them to a point to help themselves. But the goal is there, fixed. How can I do the life-saving work? And if one is proper in doing that, then one will have opportunities to move in such situations and will save lives. Because especially in spiritual life, there is wages, but different than what we normally experience. The wages or the salary is that you get more service. As you are doing service and you are proper, then you get more service. I was just telling my devotees 2 days ago that any of them that are not highly overworked, they're in Maya. Means that they're cheating or they're being lazy. That they should be happy to know that they have some chance to do something to help someone else. And we have some who are direct disciples, and we explain to them that discipleship means that you are going to inconvenience yourself voluntarily, constantly, to try to do something to help someone else. You're going to take it as part of your life commitment to be an example in your activities so that you encourage someone to know that God is their well-wisher. To encourage someone in these difficult times to realize that there is hope. To help someone to realize that they do not have to constantly degrade themselves by doing things that are far below their actual constitutional nature. And if someone is able to do that, then the more that your desire is to serve humanity, the more your desire is to help others, the more that your desire is to try to glorify the Lord, then the more you will become empowered, the more you will become a medium. If you are having strong, loving, and compassionate desire, and you don't have facility, then it means that the Lord is just waiting to give you facility around the corner. But if it doesn't come, then there's something bad, something weak, something that has to be really rectified about the quality of your desire. Sometimes we desire to help others because we like to be condescending. Sometimes we desire to try to be involved in situations because we want to show how wonderful we are and how much someone else needs us. So we are still doing the egocentric game of still working for our own mind and intelligence and senses. But when it's that you are ready to inconvenience yourself if necessary, not that you're just looking for comfort. Srimad Bhagavatam says an easy life and devotional service go ill together. If you are a proper spiritualist, then when there is a sense of comfort, you're immediately thinking what else you have to do or how you can refine a particular situation of service, how you can now go on to the next chapter, the next phase. We have marathons here almost every week. A marathon involving how each person can try to see how to look closer in inventory of themselves and how they do something to help someone. Doesn't matter who it is. Somehow do something to make the quality of life better for someone. And to stop thinking of your own individual problems, because the more you feed your problem, the more that problem does what? The more it grows and expands, and you get more of the same stuff. What you put your most energy into is what you're going to get more of. So if you are trying to go out and to help, even though you may be handicapped, but if you go to help someone else, then you will be able to access so much of what you have, and the divine helpers of the Lord will then even take away your own handicap and will allow that handicap literally to be something that helps you to become more contemplative, more introspective, so that the quality of your help is even more dynamic. Without austerity and simplicity, no one can remain enthusiastic in a devotional process. If you don't believe it, then you have a simple life, and then you start overly complicating your life, and you find how your sense of clarity and spiritual enthusiasm begins to wane. Even though it is ironic, because the more you simplify your life, the more the Lord is going to give you for His service. But there still must be a sense of detachment, even though there is so much activities or so much interactions or so much opulences or so many things that you have available. Otherwise, it's one of the biggest tricks to keep you, let you grow, and then to give you certain things that will directly cause you to deter from the pinpointed, desperate situations. One of our great authorities, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, makes a prayer called the Ruti prayer. And he says, another day has passed and still I have not surrendered to the Lord. Where will I go? Who can help me? What shall I do? Each day we should look and think, somehow today I have not given all to the Lord. Even though the Lord is sending so much help and is so much summoning me, but somehow my ignorance, my fears, and my insanity is causing me to constantly engage in things that are detrimental to my actual existence. Another day has passed, and still I am remaining outside of being able to be with the most worshipful, loving environment. How much I am causing myself more contamination, more incarceration by somehow running after those things that lifetime after lifetime I have seen have not produced that higher taste. How long will I continue this kind of addiction? How long will I continue not loving myself and therefore not being able to experience deeper levels of love? It is all, beloved, about love. The means is love. The ultimate connection is divine, gushing, loving experiences. And it can only be processed in a loving environment. If someone is trying to teach you, and they're just trying to teach you mysticism, they're just trying to teach you about how to gain power, they're trying to teach you structures, scriptures, routines, yajnas, and there is not a basic foundation of love, there is something very, unfortunately, that is taking place. Something very significant is missing. Because all of these things are to help us to bring out more of that natural, loving, constitutional nature that we have. So the race you are, the church you go to, the mantras that you chant, the associations that you have, all of these things are wonderful if they are increasing your enthusiasm to serve God. If they are increasing your enthusiasm to run away from the sin, there cannot be a strong attachment to the relative and think that you're going to have a strong connection with the absolute. That is not sectarian. It is that these things, they go ill together. So as we release one, then the other we can then begin to access with a greater sense of expedience. Otherwise, you have so many spiritualists who engage in what's called Boga Tyaga. One day they're feeling so inspired, and the next day they're almost suicidal. How can that be? After many, many years of engaging yourself in some spiritual process, how can you now begin to think that God does not care for you, that there is no purpose to life? It means that you are grabbing and getting some little taste, but you keep going back and holding on even stronger to the mundane. And although you were saying God, 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 although you were saying Allah, Allah, although you were saying Krishna, Krishna, although you were saying Yahweh, Yahweh, still in the back of your conscience you're saying, me, mine, when, now. And we cannot be able to love the Lord like that. We cannot love the Lord based on trying to get what we want, but we have to be able to receive what we need. And as long as there's too much mine, I and me, Mahamati, as long as there is too much emphasis on my distinction, my profit, my glorification, then something is wrong. Because that is the mindset of the world of limitations. That is the mindset of this Marcha Loka. That is the mindset of this world where basically it is constantly the cheaters and the cheated. When entities from higher realms come into this environment, one of the most amazing things is the amount of exploitation, abuse, and misuse, and particularly the amount of mind games that people play. And so whatever tradition you follow, you've heard of angels, archangels, you've heard of devas, demigods, you've heard of saints and sadhus and prophets. Well, they come to tell us what? They come to tell us something's wrong here. They tell us that this is not ultimately our home. They emphasize heaven, paradise, the kingdom of God. They tell us something's wrong, that we have to first love God with all, not 75, 80%, not 50, not 45%, with all of our hearts. But we think, hey, I ain't going to give nobody all of anything I have. Because if I give them all, I won't have anything left. That is mature. Because the more you give spiritually, the more you are going to receive. But our insanity and our experiences in this realm tells us that if you don't take yours, borrow, steal, whatever you have to for yourself, you're going to miss out. But if I'm thinking that, and you're thinking that, and he's thinking that, and she's thinking that, and they're thinking that, then what happens? You kill me, I kill you, they kill us, we kill them. That is the international arena. It is all based on these kind of considerations. Ways to refine the ability to annihilate and to destroy. But it should be that I love you, and not that I lust after you, or not that I love you if. I don't love you only because you are a Hare Krishna. I don't love you only because you are Buddhist, only because you are Hindu, only because you are American, only because you're Indian, only because you're white, only because you're black, only because you're male, only because you're female. No. I love you because you are a aspect of God. And the way that I relate to you is how I'm relating to God. It's not a matter of what we're hearing more and more now, your private life and your public life and your social life
and your commercial life. No, you're the same person. You're the same one acting in different arenas. So I do not love you, or you shouldn't love me, because I am an African chief, or I am an academician, or I am a spiritualist, or I am a man, or this. It got nothing. It has nothing to do with any of those things. It's about what? It's about if you allow me, or if someone allows in your environment, helps you to see how to get out of the shackles of imprisonment. If someone helps you to be able to get your own treasure, then that person is a well-wisher. And that person is actually addressing you in real loving way. Not the person who, when you go to his house or she comes to your house, you sit down together and you smile and you poison each other. Oh, my friend, I haven't seen you in a little while. Here, take this poison. Some drink. Some intoxication. Huh? Now, after we have poisoned ourselves, let us go out and do something even more degrading to each other. And let us say that we care for each other. Let us say that we care for our family. Let us say we care for our society. As our example, if it is followed, it will simply bring everything down to a faster level. We were just the other day speaking to a community in North Carolina, and we were telling them how that anything that you do, that if it is done on a massive scale, and if it cannot produce helpfulness, righteousness, if it cannot produce a higher good for the majority of people, it is wrong. Something that is proper, if you do it, if I do it, if she does it, it will help everybody more. Not some self-invested interest or some sovereign consideration, but if it is done, if it is righteous, if it is actually for the human and the spiritual growth, then if it is done, it will help everyone more. It doesn't have to be done the exact same way, but it will have the benefits. But something that is sinful that you do, and you can monitor your own sinful activity, because we have amazing ways of rationalizing our nonsense. And the deities want to open, I would give you a stronger word. We have ways to rationalize ridiculousness, because it's hard to look in the mirror and see ourselves. But if that same action was done by many people, or everyone, we would immediately know and see that it is improper. So there are many things that we do now that society has made us think it's okay and it's perverted. There are many things that we do now that are unhealthy, but we justify it because we want it, and we find some way to rationalize, to conceptualize on it, and feel that it's okay, so that we don't have to be challenging ourselves. We don't have to challenge ourselves on that. But when we take it to a broader extent and see it within others, we'll merely be able to see that if many people did this, it would be destructive. So we have to be much more conscious of community, much more conscious of village, much more conscious of world situations. Even now, you hear the strategicians telling you to act locally and think internationally. Well, think locally, think nationally, think internationally, think intergalaxy, think beyond just your immediate, because everything that we do has such a playoff effect. And every individual, within each person, there is so much prana, so much life force, so much energy, that even the prana within one person can affect the prana within the entire universe. So if somebody tells you, oh, the problems are so great, nothing can be done, someone tells you, or you tell yourself, the mind in you, the lower self tells you, that don't try to pursue a spiritual lifestyle so much after all. What changes are you really going to make? If you accept that kind of defeatist attitude, then you are a first-class chump. You are a first-class foolish person. If you allow yourself to think that your existence, You know, the brain itself has billions of cells, one person's brain, and can contain so many billions of facts. The heart, all your organs are so intricate in so many ways that the body itself is like a universe. Within one person's body is millions of other living entities. So every time your mind tries to tell you that, you just say, well, that's all right, because I'm going to at least take care of this city inside of here. And all of those entities that by thinking righteously and by acting properly that I have some commitment of responsibility for. And of course, that extends itself. Because particularly these days, the forces of oppression will want us to become so unenthusiastic, and I'm going to end in about 2 minutes, so unenthusiastic that we lose our ability to do what we can do. And when so many people start thinking they can do nothing, nobody does anything. But you get a group of people who think they can do something, they pull their little resources together. And how dynamic that can be. And even if you can't do much, do what you can with quality. Because that is what is ultimately important. It is not so important that you have a congregation of 500 or 5,000 people. What is important is that you have some quality of exchange. Otherwise, it's just phantasmagoria. And as you have quality of exchange, you make a significant difference in the world. Because there are so many spiritual helpers that you see and don't see who want to assist you, but you just have to come up at least to a point to connect. New experiences, new works, new services, new challenges, so that it keeps the mind and consciousness sharp. And sometimes you have to do a little mental gymnastic with yourself and to create some novelty within your particular life. One way to do it is less technique. Is every time you go to bed, you think in terms of take inventory of what you did the previous day and think that the next day you are going to consciously try to improve on your quality of relationship. You're going to consciously try to improve on how you can become more of a medium to let the higher power come through you. That you consciously try to see what things are still remaining in you that you need to have moved so that you can be more of that loving entity. Because if you don't, you simply cheat yourself. And we're at a time now where we're taking final examinations. You see many, many things happening. You see these earthquakes and hurricanes and tornadoes and the famines all over the place. And most of you now, you're working twice as hard and you have half the amount of money that you had even 10, 15 years ago. And many of you are in situations, especially in the governmental the department, where next year you may lose your job. Retrenchment is taking place. So it is time now that we learn how to simplify our lives. We learn how to align ourselves with more real friends. Not those kind of friends and associates who enhance your ability to deteriorate yourself or who encourage you to do something that is destructive to the society. Love yourself sufficiently that you are more concerned about the quality of vibrations that you allow to come in your environment. And always see everything now as an emergency. Because we are on borrowed time. It's not that you have so much time to do something. Your time is already up. We're on borrowed time. So with that little bit of time we have borrowed, you were to do something at 4 o'clock, at 5 o'clock, it is already late, and you ask for 5 minutes more. So now that last 5 or 10 minutes, you are really thinking, well, I was a little bit slack before, but these last 5, 10 minutes, I am going to be intense. So see your life in terms of being on borrowed time so that you begin to arrange your priorities in such a way that when you do go to bed at night, you feel excited, that you are tired, that you gave so much in conscious-raising activities, and you feel good about yourself knowing that you made a difference. That somehow you affected someone's life And because of that, that comes back to you. So this enthusiasm, in conclusion, is very important. And we must have an alarm go off in our minds when we find that we are becoming unenthusiastic. Because as soon as you become unenthusiastic, then you start increasing your involvement in some of the lower nature things. Isn't it? When you become unenthusiastic, now you want to sleep 12, 14 hours a day. Sometimes people can't get out of bed for 2 days. You call them, call me back. Sometimes they can be so depressed. We all had those experiences. You can be so depressed that even though you haven't eaten in 2 days, you have no desire to eat. You can be so depressed that your favorite dress, your favorite this, your favorite that, your favorite music, your favorite song, it's there, but you have no desire to associate with it. When you find that you're unenthusiastic, your sexual agitations become magnified like anything. Just monitor these things. When you're unenthusiastic, you become so much more into defending because you feel so insecure. You're thinking everybody's looking at you, realizing that you're a chump. You don't want people to know it. You want to hide it. So when you're unenthusiastic, then all of those kind of things you begin to project. And by projecting them, you summon more of that. But when you are enthusiastic, then you can take more advantage of things that are happening to you. You can improve on the quality of relationships. You can improve on the quality of your services. And you do those things ready for the next thing. Not with apathy, not in a lackadaisical way, but you do that happy that now you have a chance to take on another challenge, to do another service, to engage in another project, to engage in another offering. So we are thinking in that spirit as we made the prayer to our spiritual master that we do some work and then we run with it and offer it at the feet of our guru. And then that's taken and passed up to his guru, and that's passed to his guru. And that reaches the transcendental realm. And that brings in more helpers, because more devotion brings in more openings, more avenue for devotion to come through. And as we begin to become dull in society by so much of the patterns of the media and the social and secular environment, then those sins we feel no compunction with, and that's what's happening now. People are becoming so sinful, and they feel no sense of regret or compunction. It's very subtle the way this very nefarious covering is taking place. People are becoming so repeatedly highly sinful, but without any kind of regret or bad feelings about it. And that is one of the big thrusts that you got to be careful when you turn on, you go to the movies or you watch your television, you listen to the radio, that the greatest patterns now is to try to get the largest number of people to be degraded, to be sinful, and to feel comfortable with that. And that way, you already become such a puppet for abuse, exploitation, and manipulation. There's what is called rakshasas, or very empowered beings that have mystic and psychic power, tremendous amount of knowledge and potency, far beyond the normal human realm, and they actively try to create situations within the universe, within the societies, so that it brings in more atheism and encourages people to miss the treasures or to miss the divine loving experiences. So a war goes on constantly between the demons or suras and the devas or the spiritual helpers. So those wars are beginning to come now to some finalization. So what is going on now in America, throughout the world, is people are being aligned and being processed to what they really are ready for as they move on into their next life. So don't go so far in your spiritual commitments and then allow yourself to become unenthusiastic when you have chance to cash in on your check. There are many, many spiritual people who have some heavy checks, and now they are like what we call in Africa the dupers, or people who come and they try to take away from what you have because they know you got something. There are many situations like that now, because many, many souls have taken birth at this particular time on the planet to be about basic conscious raising activities. And now some of those souls are ready to start cashing in, and there's going to be a lot of attempt to try to cause you to become so sectarian, so deviant, so caught up in the externals, so much blown out in your interpersonal relationships, so much insecure about what you have, what you don't have, what you think that you want, to be able to miss the chance to get what you really need. So try yourself to be a catalyst to remind others, and then the wages will be you'll be more blessed. And when you find in your own conscience you're becoming unenthusiastic, then adventure into some additional projects, some other ways of how to be more austere, simple, and to give yourself. And as you give yourself more to God and to His service, He will give Himself more to you. We love you very much. We're very happy to be with all of you. And we hope that somehow we said something that you take home and you give a little love to someone more. That somehow we said something that when the challenge comes, where there is some so-called friendship that is basically degrading, that you step aside from that. When the opportunity comes to be able to be a spiritual warrior for the Lord, that you take up the banner, you take up the armor of devotion, the armor of sadhu, the armor of shastra, the armor of keeping some sense of regulation in your life, and anticipation of the negative, not a meditation that you lament thinking of the negative, but no warrior goes out without understanding something about the enemy. No warrior goes out without knowing something about the Maya that is accessible. So you can avoid that as you do the positive thing and march ahead on to victory, so that one day we can be able to look back at these particular times and think, well, it wasn't so bad after all. Huh? I'm glad I remained faithful, because after all, it wasn't so bad. I see that it was surely worth any austerity, any regulation, any commitment that I gave. It was surely worth it. It's even greater than what I expected. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.